allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mike, you want to?
God, we thank you for this beautiful day and the gift of life, and we ask that you watch over us. We also ask that you forgive us when we're not mindful of your presence and your love for us. We ask that you bring that presence close to us this morning as we do the public's work. Guide us and give us the wisdom to make decisions that are good for the people that we represent. Dear God, we also ask that you keep our troops safe, and we pray for peace. Oh God, we pray for peace. In our son's name we pray. In your son's name we pray, amen.
Can I help you? Maybe we can help you.
Sure, we too. But
we continue.
Oh, you got to go in through security and then the director, right through the glass area over here.
All right.
And then the director,
Have the communications?
First would be approved minutes from the last meeting, approved travel and training, grant leave of absence for deputy sheriff, grant pay adjustment for community development specialist and administrative secretary for community development. Also approved pay adjustment for clerk for CSEA. Resignation of intermittent temporary building and zoning employee. Amend resolution regarding resignation of lead building and ground maintenance worker who retired. Resignation of seasonal employees for area court. Under county engineer, approve and execute Lynn Road agreement with Welsh Development Company, exchange bond for Port Union Distribution Center Phase 2, for Port Union Distribution Center Section 10, for Port Union at Union Center Phase 2, cancel performance bond for Woods of Lakewood, Woods of Lakewood Section 2, Providence Meadows, Woods of Schaefer Section 1, Woods of Schaefer Section 2. Receive and refer bids for contract number 6-19. Award contract 6-4M for truck barn to Wayne Builders Building Incorporated under Environmental Services. Receive and refer bids for Cincinnati Dayton water main replacement. Release 1-year maintenance bond for Francis Manor Section Offsite Sanitary, Francis Manor Section 1, Liberty Center Sanitary Sewer Extension 2, Trails of Four Bridges Phase 6. Award contract to Larry Smith Contractors. Approve OPWC disbursement request for Allen Road Water Improvement. Approve part-time temporary employee. Under finance, approve transfers and appropriations. Accept amended certificate of estimated resources dated September 21st. Accept new funds established for purposes of receiving revenue and dispersing funds. Under job and family services, accept payroll. Approve contract with community behavioral health. Under miscellaneous, approve 07 holiday schedule. Execute extended warranty and software maintenance agreement. That's for Board of Election. Award contract to Forensic and Mental Health Services. Execute 5 Butler County Entitlement Program Project Agreements. Reappoint 4 members to Ohio Public Defenders Board. Appointment to outside legal counsel. Grant funds to Pyramid Hill Sculpture and Park and Museum. Levy assessment for stormwater management for 33.675 acres in Liberty Township. Execute contract with Diebold Election Services. Also approve a resolution encouraging AK Steel Corporation and Armco employees to resolve lockout, and approve 4 slots to attend the Child Assault Conference this week, September 27th through the 28th, through the 30th, I'm sorry.
Move to approve.
I have a question about the, call that resolution's on a different thing, never mind.
No, okay, I added it in there already.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, good, okay.
Sir.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes. Okay, John? Thank you for coming down this morning.
Short notice.
Thank you for having me. I apologize for being a few minutes late. I was talking with Ryan Day in Representative Boehner's office. They have tell me that Representative Boehner has a keen interest in this topic and has been paying very, he and his staff have been paying very close attention to this, and they assure me that this is getting great attention and will be driven forward. So for
well,
those
might give us a good summary of your meeting yesterday.
For those comments to make any sense, I'll give you a summary of what's going on. As you may know, we've been working very closely with ODOT and Federal Highway Administration for the final approvals for the Liberty Interchange project. We're in the process. We have a number of concurrent approvals that are underway. We have some environmental related documents that are going through their paces. We've completed the stage two design of the project, which is a step in a three-stage design process that we need to go through. About 6 or 7 months ago, ODOT suggested that we combine in order to sell or award the contracts for both our project to construct the Liberty Interchange, just the interstate ramp portion of the project, along with the I-75 widening, the addition of the fourth lane in each direction, that if we combine the two projects together, they'd be jointly administered and that we'd have some advantages in pricing, hopefully, as the project got sold, along with the very large widening project. We've discovered over the last couple of weeks that, and I might say too, as Commissioner Fox suggested we might, we've run into some problems about the process by which we would have to acquire right-of-way. That we determined that by blending the two projects together, federal and local funds would be commingled, and by the presence of the federal funds, we'd be required to follow a federal process in the acquisition of the right-of-way. And that became a big issue because that process would be much more expensive for us and make it difficult, if not impossible, to complete the project. But ODOT, once we realized that that was the case, has been very cooperative in agreeing to administer the two projects separately but concurrently, but that would eliminate the commingling of funds and allow us to proceed without the use of the Federal Uniform Act, it's referred to, which is the guideline for right-of-way acquisition when federal funds are involved in a project. So again, ODOT was very, very cooperative in agreeing, once we realized our mistake, that we would separate the two projects back out but do them concurrently. Well, the Federal Highway Administration was involved in that process and in that decision and supported that decision to separate the two projects, but it raised the project to a level of scrutiny from the Ohio Division Director of Federal Highways, Dennis Decker, about design issues related to the project, design issues that were brought up and addressed, frankly, years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, as we started this design process. We've been through a series of approvals going from preliminary planning to design alternatives now into the final design. And in yesterday's meeting, Dennis Decker, the Ohio Administrator of FHWA, started asking questions about, well, why didn't you try this alternative or that alternative? Wouldn't that be better? And his goal, which is well known, is the Federal Highway wants to preserve the integrity of the interstate. That's their top priority in these design projects. Well, we were able to show him that the design alternatives that he was questioning or was inquiring about were considered back in 2003 and eliminated for technical reasons. And again, ODOT was very, very adamant in defending their own decisions and our decisions in arriving at the design alternative that we've come up with. Other issues that Mr. Decker raised had to do with the proximity of the Liberty Interchange to both Tylersville Road Interchange and the Sinday Road Interchange on State Route 129. Again, issues that we have been asked and answered repeatedly over the last several years. He was put in what I assume was not a very comfortable position for him. There was certainly, I think, egg on the face of the Federal Highway folks, and We all had a clear indication that his staff was not going to enjoy the rest of the day yesterday after that meeting, that he was very concerned about his staff's actions over the last weeks, months, and perhaps years. You know, whether that's because they should have made different decisions along the way or because he wasn't fully briefed and was put in a position of not knowing much about the project and the decisions we've made yesterday, I'm not fully sure. But he assured me that this project would, the final document that we need from the Federal Highway Administration for approval, the IMS, or the Interchange Modification Study, would be, it required approval in Washington, but we would be transmitted to Washington within the next 2 weeks for their consideration, and that he wanted to do some additional review of all the documentation that's been submitted over the last 3 years before he made that final recommendation up to Washington. He said on a number of occasions that he may have to swallow hard and accept all the decisions that have been made. I have the sense that that's going to be his position, but nonetheless, the final decision is one to be made in Washington. So the call today from Ryan Day was critical. Ryan assured me that the folks in Washington are very aware of the project and are already applying pressure to the Department of Transportation and Federal Highways to make this approval, that this interchange is a critical project in John's view and John Boehner's view, and would continue to receive that level of attention in getting this through. I'll also say that both of our senators have their staffs have also been very attentive to this project once we raised the issue to them. Nan Cahill, who is one of Senator Voinovich's local representatives, was at the meeting yesterday, heard firsthand what had happened, and I'll be spending time throughout this week making sure that the transportation legislative aides of all three legislators are very aware of the project, fully understand the long list of approvals and submittals and resubmittals and resubmittals that we've made throughout this process, so that they understand that it's a very unreasonable position for Federal Highways to take, that we ought to be looking back at these design considerations at 11:59 in the project at this very late hour. So, and every indication I've received from all three legislators' offices is that they understand that, fully understand the urgency of the project, and will do their best to help move this forward.
John, thank you. Is there any recommendations you'd like to give us for action?
Not at this point, other than perhaps to the extent that you communicate with any of those offices individually, that you express your, as if nothing else, as residents of the county, and certainly as local legislative leaders, your feelings about the importance of the interchange. Given the level of attention that it's received, and also on the guidance that I've received from each of the offices, they've told me they don't need letters, they don't need a whole lot of background work going on into this, that they fully understand the need and will apply the leverage that they have. So rather than have a lot of our staff folks working on things in the background, I think just awareness and that level of that indication of support would be helpful. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mr. Okay. President?
Yes.
We understand the director of the Ohio Director of Federal Highway Administration was just yesterday brought into this conversation.
Has just in the last week or so been brought into this conversation.
And how long have we been working on it?
Since our first submittal to ODOT was in October of 2003, and that was a five-step planning document that was also shared with Federal Highways and included some of the questions that he was asking yesterday.
And did Federal Highway, his staff, give approvals and consent to decisions that were made at the ODOT level along the way?
They were involved in all of those decisions. I'm still gathering the documentation to see whose signatures and indications are on there. But we have correspondence with specific questions raised from Federal Highway staff throughout the process. I'm not sure if there's a formal approval that they've had to give to date, but,
no, there's
but
no
they've
formal
certainly been
approvals,
involved.
But when we went through same issues at Union Center, when we went through 129, we had weekly meetings with those folks, including the Federal Highway Administration staff and with the periodically with the director. And because the fact of the matter is, even though it's 1159 in the process is that when it's submitted from the state to the feds, they have approval right or disapproval right.
Right.
So certainly we're aware of and involved, but did we get them on record throughout the process?
We do have them
okay?
on record. They have provided us comments throughout the process to the preliminary submittals of all the documents that we've given to date. And the issues raised yesterday are totally outside of the indications, the questions that they've had throughout the process.
So apparently there was a disconnect between Mr. Decker's staff and him.
Correct.
So we don't know when or at what point there were ever any discussions with him about
it. It was very clear yesterday that he has had no involvement in the project or that the quality of the briefings that he has received were inadequate.
And we've been working on it since 2003.
Yes, our first contract with our consultant was actually issued in 2002, but our first submittal was in 2003.
When he raised questions about the design, and you mentioned that his role, FHWA's role, is to protect the integrity of the system, does that mean usually what that translates to is they don't want any interchanges?
Not his position.
I was going to say, was it his objection to the notion, or was it to, you know, where this ramp goes versus another ramp?
More the latter. It was, why didn't you combine these traffic flows into a ramp before you merged it into the main line versus having separate flows merge independently into the main line? Why does this ramp connect the way it does? It was more into the detail of the configuration than the principle of the interchange itself.
And when it goes up to senior staff in Washington, there is a recommendation to approve or not to approve.
Correct.
When will we know what position Mr. Decker will take, if at all?
He indicated that he would provide that indication within 2 weeks. He wanted some internal review time, but would make his recommendation and forward it within 2 weeks. And I informed Representative Boehner's office. They asked what our deadline was, what our drop dead date was, and that I indicated that we need to know by mid-October exactly what we need to have the final decision from the feds by mid-October, or it would risk delaying the follow-on work that we still need to accomplish, right-of-way acquisition, completion of the final set of design drawings, our financing negotiations that we'll be doing over the coming weeks and months.
So you're hoping to get the final approval from Washington by mid-October?
Correct.
It seems to me it wouldn't do any damage if we sent from the commission a letter to our senators and to our congressmen saying this is important and we'd like you to approve it or help work to approve
it. I agree
it
would do no damage. And I'd be happy to work with Derek in drafting that letter.
I think that my concern is, having been through this so many times, is that these guys work in mysterious way. We got one thing working for us. If this is something that you know, my concern is, you get it, and I've had this. I've seen this happen. Is that this guy in Ohio says, okay, I'll send it up and approve it. Then he calls his buddy in Washington and says, look, I just sent you a bunch of crap, and I'd like you to say no, so you take the hit for it. And that's the thing.
Because they can't get to you.
Because they can't, you know, these guys, you never see them, you never, you know, they're faceless. And the guys that can get to them are our senators and our congressmen. I mean, to get this far in the process and to be told, even though this is the process, that they do have the final, this is the piece that they get a hold of to say either you got it right or you got it wrong.
I was worried about ODOT doing that same thing to the federal, to Mr. Decker. And you don't get that.
No, ODOT was on the hot seat as much as we were in defending the design decisions that have been made throughout the process and stepped right up. Mm-hmm. There were three or four people from the district office at the meeting yesterday and another three folks from central office. And it was all of us versus the feds, if you will. There was very, and ODOT is being very supportive and flexible, the district office, in ensuring that we can administer these two contracts separately to allow us to avoid the Uniform Act. So I see nothing but cooperation and support from ODOT at this point.
Mr. President.
Yes.
How much have we spent so far on engineering? Do you know?
In excess of $1 million on engineering and environmental evaluations and the whole process.
And if the feds say, well, we got to redo it, then we have to spend additional money to...
Correct.
And we'll probably most likely miss the deadline with the widening of 75?
Correct. Although with separating the two projects, we have a little more leeway now in our timing. The two projects don't have to sell exactly concurrently. So that the decision to re-separate them gives us a little more flexibility. But nonetheless, we want it to be close enough so that we can take advantage and hopefully gain the pricing advantages of having the same contractor doing the work while they're already mobilized and on site. We think that will be a tremendous advantage in the pricing of the work. So, the ODOT district staff has given us every indication, have pledged their support in working through the contract administration issues that we need to deal with there.
Mr. Decker said that the bottom line is that he'll most likely have to swallow hard to accept
this. Those were
his
words, right.
Well, you can tell him we got some good Butler County water to help him wash that down.
I will let him know that.
Be happy to send it to him.
Is ODOT going to sell their project first?
Probably, and it will sell next fall.
That would help us. Actually, mm-hmm. In terms of pricing.
Right.
What's our status on the Cox Road project, if you know?
When we start turning the dirt. Property owners associated with Cox Road, knowing the frustrations that we've had over the last several months with design approvals and so forth, have indicated that they are willing to sign the assessment and move the project forward, but that they want to see the final approval for the interstate project happened first. One property owner in particular whose family has owned the property for a long, long time has essentially no basis and no bills to pay regarding the property, isn't willing to sign the assessment to start getting a big addition to his tax bill on the property unless there's going to be an interchange along with it. They're firmly convinced that...
And on the east side or the west side?
On the west side of Cox Road, between the interstate and Cox Road extension. And frankly, that's not an unreasonable position for them to be taking. They see that the development of their property and the maximization of their value depends on the interchange.
Right.
And to assume a bill for the Cox Road extension without the interchange is an expense they're not willing to take.
When they say... In other words, like if Federal Highway approves it, then they'll...
When they are convinced there's going to be an interchange, they'll sign the assessment and move it forward.
Why are we... I mean, I don't understand why we don't just assess them.
Correct.
Some of this property owners have been fooling around with us now for several years. Why not? Why, you know, it's nice to have people... feel good about things, but the bottom line is, even if there were not an interchange, we're still going to push Cox out.
I agree with that. That's a political decision that can certainly be made. I wouldn't recommend it, given the complexity of this interchange.
So that means that Cox Road will not be under construction this fall.
No, part of the basis for my telling federal staff of the October 16th deadline was to get the assurances we need to get the voluntary assessment to the table.
So you
still get it.
The trigger for them to agree to it would be Federal Highway Administration's
yes.
approval.
Yes.
And then we could proceed with the construction of the Cox Road push
yes.
out.
Yes.
And what about the Hamilton Mason Road?
Hamilton Mason Road East will follow Cox Road because the intersection of Hamilton Mason Road and Cox Road is part of the design of the Cox Road project.
Okay.
And then Hamilton Mason Road West, where there are more a larger number of right-of-way acquisitions to make, will be the last phase of the project.
I think
the order is interchange simultaneously. Well, Cox Road will go first, with Hamilton Mason East to follow. The interchange will go concurrently with the state's widening of I-75, and then Hamilton Mason Road West would be the last piece of the overall project.
Mr. President, I think we ought to put in the letter the significance of this thing from a jobs perspective.
Certainly.
This is the next Union Center Boulevard.
Absolutely.
I don't know if any of you, well, I know we were out there. I don't know if we were or not. I know I was the
groundbreaking
the hospital,
for children.
Groundbreaking. But this is a jobs engine.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at, in the whole area, I forget what the numbers were. I think it was, 10,000-15,000 mm-hmm. jobs
yeah.
in a 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for really this property is so ideally located between Dayton and Cincinnati. It's going to be a great development site, and we've already waited far too long. This is an example of what John and I've talked about repeatedly, is that when you move these projects, you always have something unexpected. I mean, who could imagine mm-hmm. that after 3 years of discussion, the director of this is a relatively small office in Columbus
Correct.
For Highway Administration. It's like you wonder, do they even talk to each other? I mean, how many
Absolutely.
Do you think is even on the staff there? It can't be very many.
20, perhaps.
I mean, it's
Given
amazing.
The scale of the office.
3 years. On a project that generates 10,000-15,000 jobs, and the director of the office apparently just finds out that the details of the discussion,
that's what got my hair standing up in the end. The same thing is that something doesn't sound right here.
Exactly, and it just, they take turns in the bureaucracy being the bad guy. I don't know if they draw straws or what. It's like it's your turn today or whatever. Mm-hmm. And these projects are fraught with these types of problems. That's why when you get an opportunity to accelerate it, you have to do that to make up for those days like today
Absolutely.
Where we learn that we've got an unexpected issue. Usually by this point you expect that, hey, they've
we
already had those discussions.
Going downhill.
Everybody's, all those questions that he raised just yesterday have already been dealt with, which they were with the staff. Unfortunately, he's the guy that gets to say yes or no at this level.
Right.
So anyway, I think we ought to point out the importance of the economic development perspective of this as we in our letter.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else like to address?
Morning.
Good morning.
I'll go ahead and state for the record, I know that you know, but my name is Ronica Dillingham and I'm the Executive Director of Mental Health Matters. First off, while I'm here this morning, I would like to report that based upon the request for our organization to provide some media attention for foster care recruitment, our agency has been able to come up with at least $30,000 to implement a media blitz for foster care recruitment commercials commencing on October the 1st. So we're pleased to be able to do that and happy to help out in that way with our community.
Well, you know, if I appreciate the money and everything, but the timing may want to wait until after the review in case there's any reforms that come out of that committee's report, so we know who we want to target. So
I appreciate that and I understand that. However, since our organization is a mental health awareness organization, we are putting this and using funds that we had started to raise and continue to raise for Mental Illness Awareness Week, which is October, starts October 1st. So it makes sense for our organization to be able to help the community in a way that also works with our mission and our goals to promote mental health issues during Mental Illness Week. So I appreciate that, and hopefully we'll be able to raise more money and continue that effort after the review panel has finished. Okay. But we do have the commercials already scheduled to commence on October the 1st.
Okay.
And secondly, I'm here to share with you and to ask for your support in some changes that I would like to take to our legislature for them to take under serious consideration as a first step in making kids safer who are in foster care. I do not feel that mere policy changes at the local level are enough to stop future tragedies, especially in light of the fact that a May report by the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services shows that Butler County ranked second in the percentage of children abused by foster parents in a state comparison of 9 similar-sized counties. Here is a summary of my proposed legislations. 1, to make it a felony violation of Ohio law to knowingly give false information on an application to become a foster parent. 2, all foster parents should be required to report any change in circumstances that could affect the well-being of a child in their care. The failure to report a change in circumstance on behalf of foster parents should be grounds for revocation of foster care license. 3, all foster care placement agencies and Ohio Department of Job and Family Services should be given access to systems such as BCI, NCIC, and/or LEADS, and require that all foster parents be registered with the Statewide Information Center, whereupon all local police agencies could report criminal activity pertaining to any foster parent. 4, create a law making it a felony for any mother to recklessly use illegal drugs while pregnant. Additionally, the mother would be charged with a felony if a child is born with traces of illegal substances in the infant's blood system. Thousands of children are abused, neglected, and maltreated every year. Research indicates that without the appropriate treatment and help, these children will likely carry lifelong emotional scars of their abuse, neglect, maltreatment, exposure to domestic violence, and exposure to substance abuse, and as adults, repeat this destructive cycle. Mental Health Matters believes that a policy should be put into place that guarantees that any abused, neglected, or maltreated child under the jurisdiction of a child protection agency or a child adversely affected by exposure to domestic violence, drug and alcohol abuse, should have a right to treatment for any emotional or mental trauma, disorder, or illness resulting from such circumstances. The state should appropriate such funds as should be necessary to assure such access. I have discussed the legislation I'm about to suggest with Butler County Prosecutor Robin Piper, as well as Hamilton County Prosecutor Joe Dieters, as well as County Commissioner Mike Fox, who have all agreed to fully support the legislation that I am proposing. First, Ohio legislators should enact legislation making it a serious felony violation of Ohio law to knowingly give false information on an application to become a foster parent. This would easily be accomplished with a disclosure at the bottom of every foster care license application, making the applicant swear and attest that the information they are giving is true and accurate to the best of their knowledge, and making the applicant aware that falsification of a foster care application would be a felony offense. Although many statewide private foster care agency applications warn applicants that there can be criminal consequences or application denial if an applicant knowingly makes a false statement on such application, as contained in Senate Bill 238, where the care of children are concerned, I am requesting that the existing statute be amended to a higher degree felony with the presumption of prison time. It is a felony to lie on an absentee ballot application. It is a felony to lie on an application to be a school bus driver Why is it not a felony to lie on an application for foster parenting where the welfare and safety of our children are at stake? Secondly, all foster parents should be required to report any material changes in circumstances from the initial date of their foster care license application that could affect the placement and well-being of a child in care. The failure to report such a change in circumstance on behalf of foster parents should be grounds for immediate revocation of their foster care license. If the Butler County Children's Services Board would have been aware of the domestic violence occurrence with the Carrolls in Claremont County, it is possible Marcus would have been removed from the Carrolls' residence and still be alive today. We also need to implement a better system of record keeping and sharing of information throughout our law enforcement and child protection systems. I am proposing that all foster care placement agencies and the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services be given access to such systems such as BCI, NCIC, and LEADS, and that it be required that all foster parents are registered with a statewide information center whereupon all local police agencies could report criminal activity pertaining to any foster parent. Currently, Ohio law requires the keeping of records for all persons licensed to carry a concealed weapon, and that information is available to law enforcement through LEADS at any routine traffic stop or during any criminal investigation. It would make sense that the same type of system could be used to alert law enforcement of foster parent status so that the appropriate agency could be alerted of criminal activities involving licensed foster parents. This would also enable law enforcement officers to check on the kids while they are at the scene and notify the appropriate agency without delay. Along with making changes to improve the quality of those being licensed to become foster parents, something needs to be done to help prevent pregnant mothers from causing harm to their unborn children. I am proposing the creation of a law or the extension and clarification of current child abuse laws to include drug use of pregnant women and infants who are born with drugs in their system. I am suggesting that it be made a serious felony for any mother to recklessly use illegal drugs while pregnant. Additionally, the mother would be charged with a felony where the presumption of prison time exists if a child is born with traces of illegal substances in its blood system. It is currently a second-degree felony for any person to provide or administer Schedule I or Schedule II drugs to a minor. I believe the same felony should apply to a newborn child who is born with drugs in their system. Many states have passed legislation to this effect and are prosecuting those who put their unborn and newborn children in this often fatal situation. The mother should be guilty of a serious enough offense that she would immediately lose custody of that infant and would also face the possibility of prison time. I'm sure these suggestions are not the only legislative changes that need to be made to keep Ohio children safer. I will continue to work with local groups and individuals and public officials to generate ideas and support for changes to improve our child protection system. And I thank you for the opportunity to share these ideas with you today and ask for your support as I take these to our state legislator for consideration.
Thank you very much. I think that I've been at our meetings in the previous weeks. I think we've all voiced approval and support for these changes. I know that I have, and in the respect to the mother having ingesting drugs that she shouldn't, should be held accountable, and also any change in the foster parents' situation through law enforcement's notification of the foster network, and we should have access to information, and that goes along with that. I have no problem supporting your suggestions, and which have been suggested before, and hope that we can put these amendments on to Senate Bill 238 and get it passed. I'd also like to have these suggestions passed on to the committee review for their input and review.
Didn't I just see something from the Sheriff's Department over there going to include notification on traffic stops and that sort of thing for license checks? It's along the same line.
Do you have copies?
I will have copies. I didn't know you were meeting today until early this morning, so it was a last-minute decision for me to come to you. I will have the copies prepared, and will be happy to get those to you as soon as possible.
Would you please go over the four items again?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to.
What is it you? Go ahead.
Yeah. First is to make it a felony violation of Ohio law to knowingly give false information on an application to become a foster parent. As was currently passed in Senate Bill 238 in June, it was never a problem at all to lie on an application. There was no repercussions. It's currently considered falsification, which is only a misdemeanor. So I'm requesting that it become a felony to give false information on a foster care license.
Has Senate Bill 238 passed yet?
Senate Bill 238 passed in June and will become effective in September. This year.
It passed both houses?
Well, 90 days after signed into law. So,
oh, so it was passed by both houses?
It was signed into law in June and will become effective in September, which causes falsification on a foster parent license to be considered the same as falsification of any other public document, which is a misdemeanor offense.
Okay. Second one?
That foster parents should be required to report any change in circumstances that could affect the well-being of the child in their care, any material changes, and that failure to report those changes would be grounds for revocation of their child care, foster care license.
So that would not be or would be a criminal penalty?
Would not be a criminal offense, but immediate revocation of their license to.
But it would have to spell out what changes would be required.
Absolutely. You would have to spell out what those material changes would be, or at least give some sort of a indication of so. Third being that foster care licensed providers or parents be put into the LEAD system in a similar way to those licensed to carry a concealed weapon, so that when involved in criminal activity or pulled over for any type of criminal activity, it would be knowledgeable to that police officer they are dealing with a foster parent. And even with the implementation that...
So if you have a concealed weapon presently...
Yes.
If I'm licensed to carry a concealed weapon...
Yes.
Any police contact with me, call to my house, pulling over, is cataloged in the LEAD system?
Yes, sir, and that's statewide. That's if you're licensed... If you're a Butler County resident and licensed to carry a concealed weapon and you get pulled over in Cuyahoga, it would still show up there. Or the implementation of the sheriff putting
that information. Is it just being pulled over or a call, or is it?
Any scanning of your name, anytime your name is brought up, it would flash actually three stars and then that you are CC, have a CCW.
It's not just like, did I get a ticket or did I?
Well, the reason for that is if you're being stopped and a policeman, you know, puts your license number and whose it is,
right.
They know going up to the car that this person has a. Is licensed for concealed
firearm.
Well, that's interesting because the database is already. I didn't realize they.
The database is in place.
Is already in
statewide.
That's
so. It would seem logical and probably a fairly easy fix for the same system to be used. It's the LEAD system that's used all over the state as it is. If Ohio Department of Job and Family Services, since they are the ones who ultimately have to approve each and every foster care license. Had the ability at approval of licensing to enter that into the LEAD system, then any law enforcement officer, local or statewide, would be able to access that information with just simply pulling up the name of that person.
So we want to watch people who have our children as closely as we watch people who have guns.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What was the fourth one?
The fourth one was creating it a felony for any mother to recklessly use illegal drugs while pregnant. Or give birth to a child with illegal substances in their system. Which right now there's the possible presumption of some people that our child abuse laws may incorporate that. There's nothing specific. It's an often argued point. I just think that the current child abuse laws need to be clarified so that it isn't questionable when a child is born with illegal substances in their system that the mother should be charged. I mean, right now she does lose custody of that child, but she is not charged with any criminal offense for providing drugs to that minor.
And you've reviewed this with Dieters and with Robin Piper?
I have. I've spoken at length with Mr. Piper and with Prosecutor Dieters, yes.
And they're okay with it?
They're both in support of it, yes.
Mr. President, can I have your copy?
Sure.
The four things?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. President, I think that we should, I mean, there's going to be other things, and we have discussed, as you indicated, I think that we ought to send these, and I've got another issue relating to it would like to raise for us to send to the prosecutor as soon as we're done this, but I'd make a motion that we add our support to Prosecutor Dieter's and Prosecutor Piper's support, and then send to our legislative delegation, our state legislative delegation, a letter of support asking that they, at the first opportunity, incorporate these items into legislation to modify the law, the specifics of which will, I mean, the general policy is basically you got to tell people the truth when you sign up to be a foster parent. For example, in the Marcus Faisal case, they said they owned their home. They didn't. They said they had lived there for a while. They hadn't. They had lived in eight places and
right.
so forth. The second is the change of circumstances. Clearly, I think if you make that a change of circumstance that affects the well-being of the child, it covers a lot of territory. The LEAD system, I was unaware that we already had that capacity with respect to guns. It should be a small step to add another category in there.
Absolutely.
And then the issue of using drugs, to me, is just a no-brainer. But anyway, so I would offer a motion that we add our support to this and send it on to our legislative delegation and indicate our support that they put this in a bill.
Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
And Commissioner Gallaudet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The other, Mr. President?
Yes.
The other question I had was, we had talked about this in one of our previous meetings, and I've been reviewing, I still, the best data, as I said in our last meeting, I asked them to check it again. I still haven't got word back, but 24% of the infants, I'm told by Jan Hefner, and I've got an email from her to this effect, 24% of the infants in the custody of the Children Services Agency and the children in their care were born with drugs in their system, which is, I mean, it's still mind-boggling to me that it is that many. And I found two things this week that I think, or this weekend, that may enable us, and I'd like us to send this to the prosecutor with a request that they act. I found section 2925.02 says corrupting another with drugs. And the relevant language is in A, it says no person shall knowingly do any of the following. And then A3, it says by any means administer or furnish to another or induce or cause another to use a controlled substance and thereby cause serious physical harm to the other person or cause the other person to become drug dependent. It does not mention how you do it. It doesn't say you have to do it through a syringe. It doesn't say you have to do it by, you know, feeding it to them through the mouth. It seems to me that that language...
Or in vitro.
Yeah, it seems to me if you...
It would be helpful. I do have some citations that you might be able to use in other states, Missouri, Colorado. They are sentencing women for passing drugs on through the umbilical cord with the same type of legislation we have currently in effect and utilizing that.
Yeah, I'm not... I appreciate if we need to clarify the law, that's one thing, and I think that's what you're recommending. What I'm suggesting today is the law as it sits, and there is a Supreme Court decision that where Justice Douglas wrote the prevailing opinion. I'll make it available to Derek and then he could put it in the package. But on the question of civil child abuse, and the Ohio Supreme Court has said that if a child is born with drugs in their system, it is per se child abuse. Now that's on the civil side. They've not addressed the question of criminal. However, if And he got into this, and as I read the other cases, there's all these fights about the abortion issue tied up in it. You know, there was, when does a fetus become a person? It really doesn't matter with respect to the law. It seems to me the language here simply says, no person shall, by any means. Now, if you use your body to put that drug into that system of that little baby, it seems to me that that meets the test of this. And I'm not an attorney, but when you look at the Supreme Court decision that specifically dealt with that question, when an agency went to remove a child from a parent and said, that child's birth with cocaine dependency was per se evidence that, or what do they call it, prima facie evidence that that child was abused. And the Supreme Court of Ohio said yes. So what I'd like to do is send the question up to the to our prosecutor from the commission, asking that if there's any way under the law that Ohio can be a leader in this, that Butler County can be a leader, and send a message out that if you are going to have, you're going to take drugs while you're pregnant, and basically to ask the prosecutor to, I mean, he may come back and say, well, no, you can't do that. But I think the combination of this statute and the other case that I'll get for you gives them a hook to hang their hat on and basically deliver a message that, you know, we're going to go after you criminally under current statutes. In other words, we don't have to change the law. But what I'm saying is basically asking the prosecutor to pursue this. And if he comes back and says, gee, I can't under, I don't read the law the way you do, then that even underscores even more the need to modify the law to make sure that the intent is clear. But I think your message should be clear. If you deliver a, I mean, when I was looking at the numbers around the country of marijuana babies exposed, infants are born with marijuana in their system each year across the country. 158,000 infants cocaine, 43,000 hallucinogens, I mean, it's unbelievable.
I support sending it up to the prosecutor.
Yeah.
But it's also, there's a part of me that says that we also need to have better awareness of females who have just become pregnant to know whether they were on drugs at that point and to get them help. Sometimes when a person is dependent upon drugs, you know, they can't help themselves. So we need also to be cognizant of the fact that we need to be able to get them help also and to be aware of when they go to the doctor or the health clinic or wherever for their pregnancy, that some, and I'm not sure whether they test them now or not, or a blood test, but to inform them, have information of the consequences of not staying healthy or clean. And be able to offer help to them to seek help.
I agree. And in fact, with respect to whether it's a crime per se, as you're recommending, or whether the current law can do it, I think, just as we do in other cases, if there's some effort on the part of the person to get help, because sometimes they may be, I mean, I don't know the life cycle of these drugs, how long they stay in the system. Sometimes someone, I'm sure, could be pregnant and not even realize it,
right,
before they, in other words, they're drug addicted, they're into pregnant. I don't know how long this stuff stays in the system, But once they realize they're pregnant, it seems to me they have a duty to protect that child, as they would if that child were living in their home. And the cost of these children, these cocaine-dependent babies, is like, it's unbelievable. It's estimated the cost to just fetal alcohol syndrome kids to Ohio taxpayers is $300 million a year, according to the Ohio Department of Health. That's just fetal alcohol syndrome, $300 million a year. Now, when you throw in the drugs, I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars a year that we're, I mean, you go down to children's in the neonatal unit, and you were chair of the health committee, and I'm sure you heard testimony on this stuff. These kids, you imagine the struggle the mother has, as you point out. Now a child, a little baby that has no idea what's going on in their life, and you go down there and you see them trembling and shaking, and they're just twitching, and they don't know. I mean, it's just, you have to have a two-pronged approach. You have to say, on the one hand, we're going to hold you accountable for this behavior. On the other hand, we're going to work like the dickens to help you get off. We're going to give you the treatment and the interventions that you need, because the cost, according to the Department of Health, it costs raising a child just with fetal alcohol syndromes is 100 times more expensive than providing treatment and avoiding it on the front end. So I agree with you on the prevention side. And I think as we get into the our work on the review committee and working with the other agencies, and we've got to figure out better ways to get to these folks that are carrying these children that are poisoning them at birth. That's what they're doing. They're just poisoning them at birth.
I mean, they're already breaking the law of using drugs.
Right.
What's to keep them from not, if, you know, just because they're pregnant? And that's why they need to be aware of the consequences of the evidence of, you know, when the child is born, there's going to be evidence right there that they committed a criminal act. So,
anyway, I'll send the Ohio Supreme Court case to you, Derek. I'll send copies to you guys, and you can think about it. And if possible, we can send, because I'm going to be asking Robin to do it. I just thought it might be good if all three of us do it, and say if there's any way under current law to go after these folks. Understanding it's a stretch. It's a different way of applying the statute. In other words, for some reason we have said that if you use your body to transmit the drugs to the child, in other words, let's take the child as a month old or a year old. You find drugs in its system. Then you find out, well, how did they get in there and who put them there?
Mm-hmm.
That's a crime. So the issue is not what's going on as the fetus. Is it a living person as a fetus? The issue is I have a live, living child, and that child has drugs in its system. According to the Ohio law, that per se is whoever put those drugs in the system, and it says by any means. It's okay. By any means. Including the umbilical cord. Why is, it doesn't say in here anything about except if it came by virtue of the mother's body. So that's why, you know, that's the part that I would refer him to see why we couldn't apply it that way.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Second.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Dalton?
Yes. Thank you.